There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, I'm not going to talk about Sonic Frontiers. You can't make me. Stop it.
Nope.
Don't want to.
Nope.
Don't want to tell you that it's pretty.
Not going to start the podcast like this. Nope. Hands down. No way.
Disappointing.
The amount of time that I sat between our last podcast and this, dreading it, felt like there was a giant big bat of death hanging over my head. And you know what tombstone it was holding in its gnarled claw? It said, "Here lies Sonic Frontiers," and it was going to drop it on my bloody head because I knew that you were going to be talking about it. And
well,
I
have to,
here,
right? I feel like it's been one of the most anticipated games of the year.
No, you know, for who?
What do you mean? There's millions of us. There's millions of Sonic fans.
Yeah, there's millions of Sonic fans, but
they're loving it.
There's a bigger game that has just released that people are talking about more than Sonic Frontiers.
Gotham Knights?
Yeah, that's it. Gotham Knights.
Mario Rapids?
Yeah, sure. God of War. Ragnarok.
God of War, baby.
Are we going to just address the elephant in the room then? Which is your favorite? Which is your game of the year? Go on.
We actually did that as a question. It was what's game of the year so far.
Well, let's introduce the people to what we're doing, and then we'll answer that question.
Yes, you're not wrong. We do this every time. We should say this is the Entitled Banner podcast, the UBP. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Jules Gill.
Yo.
Where we ask people for their various talking points, questions, whatever they'd like us to get into every single week. Filming a day early, but this will still go out on the Friday. Mm-hmm. So we had a massive response from people, and the overall thing in gaming right now, like you said, is God of War Ragnarok. The game released on Wednesday. We had a day for it during the middle of the week.
It's but so that people like can people book off their holidays and have a really long weekend to get through it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty sizable as well. Like, if you make a point of doing every last thing in it, you'll hit about 40 hours or whatever. So it's a pretty hefty boy. I did about 28 hours just mostly mainlining the story. Mm-hmm. Have you picked yours up yet, or are you waiting a little bit?
Bro, do I have a PS5 yet? Rough. No, I do not have a
PS5. It's on PlayStation 4, Jules.
I could get it on the PlayStation 4 then, but no, again, once
30 FPS.
As per usual, I'm just going to wait for all the hype to die down, then I'll play it about a year later. I don't know what it is. I love video games to death, but I just get more excited about the indie games that are on the horizon rather than the AAA stuff. I know that AAA game is going to be there, and the longer I wait, the more it's going to be patched and fixed and added content's going to be to it. And when I pick up my Game of the Year edition, I have the perfect experience. Mm-hmm. The indie games, though, they need extra love as soon as they hit out of the gate. You need to go and support them. You need to give them that time and attention. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I tell you what, speaking of indie stuff, Rogue Legacy 2 is just on Switch now.
Like,
it
love
was
that game.
On Steam for so long. Mm. Yeah, like, I love the original Rogue Legacy, like 2014. Or whatever.
Yeah, long time ago.
Back in day, but I saw they did an indie stream yesterday, Nintendo did, and Rogue Legacy 2 is one of the games that they just, I love when they do that thing where they show a trailer and then they just go, and it's available now. I'm like, just do that for everything. Just
have I told you about my dream? My dream,
maybe.
So this is the thing. I had this, like, you know when you have like lucid dreams where you're able to control certain aspects of it? I dreamt, right? I'm going to set the scene. This maybe take a minute, so buckle up, kids.
Okay.
So, I was dreaming that I was in this sort of like Mega City One style futuristic dystopia. There was like trash lining the streets. There was electric neon billboards around, and I was walking through, and then all of a sudden you hear this, I was at Curly's, and you just hear this big pumping bass soundtrack start filling the air, sort of like doof, 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 doof. And I was like, what is that? So you walk towards the light, you go through this tunnel, and out the other side is, boom, it's a racetrack, you're in Mute City, it's F-Zero, it's back, baby. And this is the dream that I keep having, and I keep thinking to myself, it's real, and it's going to be a thing.
You have mentioned F-Zero quite a lot.
And like Captain Falcon like slides past the thing, and he like leans out the window, and he does the little finger guns at you, and you're like, yes, yes! And then you wake up, young man,
would you like to come on a race? Yeah, I mean, the thing is like F-Zero is one of their most, like Nintendo's most overlooked franchises that feels like the most obvious bankable thing to do. Like if you had little levels where you play as Captain Falcon, then you do the race stuff in between. Yeah. Like why not? You've got story modes in Mario Golf. Why can't you put a story mode into F-Zero?
But the best thing about my dream is that I've clearly been influenced by marketing, because all of a sudden it then zooms out and I realize that I'm myself watching a trailer of this game play out, and that was actually just an animated opening, and it says F-Zero available now, and I'm like, way! Somehow that's even better.
The day that that finally returns will be pretty historic. There's not that many Nintendo franchises that people keep asking about that haven't had a new installment in years. Mm-hmm. Like even Star Fox had one a few years ago. I do want to super quickly address the Sonic Frontiers elephant in the room. Because I do feel like a lot of people were looking forward to it, including myself. And I let myself get excited for it because I loved the movie this year. And I mean, it wasn't even a great movie, but I was just like, I love Sonic. It reminded me how much I love Sonic. Mm-hmm. So I let myself get excited for Frontiers. And it's fine. It's solid. It's playable. There are parts that are really enjoyable, but there's also parts that are absolutely unacceptable. There are parts that are just ridiculously undercooked. Just stuff that is like, what the hell are you boys doing? Like, why does Sega hate Sonic so much? Oh. Why can they not put any amount of professional time into this franchise? Do they hate the fact that their copycat, their mascot took off in the first place and they're just trying to kill him every time there's a new game? What is wrong with them?
I love this. Christmas has come early, ladies and gentlemen. God. I am feasting on this turkey that Scott is providing me. What are you...
So
the good is that I've seen like reviews of it out there already, and I can say that graphically it looks impressive. The pop-in is a bit of a atrocious
The pop-in is one of the things that is unacceptable.
Yeah, that is unacceptable when you're going that fast and you're basically telling
you're
people...
You're on a PlayStation 5 in 2022 and you can't load basic world geometry from 10 years ago.
And when you've got that side-by-side God of War Ragnarok, you just go, okay, fair
God
enough.
Of War Ragnarok can load an entire realm in 2 seconds. Spider-Man can load New York City in a 1/16th replica model in 2 seconds.
That's crazy. That is
and
crazy.
Sonic can't give me a floating crate like until you're on it. Like, it's so, so stupid. It's so dumb. But the parts that work are, the combat model, surprisingly, really, really good. Yeah. And they've fleshed that out quite a lot. You can do some parries, you can do some launches. The moves you unlock are really, really cool. They're actually genuinely fun to watch and do and pull off. That stuff's great. The music is unbelievably good. Tomoyo Otani returning to be the composer, who also does lo-fi stuff on YouTube. And so you get, like, little bits of lo-fi when you're exploring, which I really like.
That's quite nice.
The first island has this really lush soft piano music, which is really nice, and when you're fishing with Big the Cat you get this other lo-fi theme
is that the other unacceptable part of the game, because when it came up in the trailer and he was like, I'm gonna show you how to do fishing, I was like, you can shut the
The thing is, I feel like Big the Cat has become the Star Wars prequel or prequels of Sonic fandom, where people have spent so much time around him that they've just convinced themselves it's all right. And I don't hate him, but he's not good either.
No.
But the actual fishing minigame's solid enough, it's fine enough. Sonic's just like, yeah, I could detense for a while. Hey, let's go. And it's like, that's fun, with a bit of lo-fi on, whatever. So the music's great, and the combat's great. It's just, the UI is horrible in terms of like the pausing stuff.
Oh,
it's really clunky. And the physics are the thing that kills it sometimes, which has always been the case in Sonic. The faster you go, the more you gotta go fast, the more you'll just get flung off like round a corner. You'll just go into the sea, or you'll go the complete wrong way, or whatever. Even moving in this, if you try and walk, he'll walk the other direction. Just pushing up on the analog stick makes him go the other way. Honestly, it's that broken in some parts. And I'm just like,
That is terrible. That is unacceptable.
Yeah, there's bits in there. I was doing the second major boss fight last night. There's like one major titan that you fight per island. So I'm on the third island now, and I was fighting this giant Titan. I'm about 10 hours in.
Yeah.
And I was fighting this Titan, and you fight them, each Titan is like supersonic. So you're flying around trying to take it out. I was just flying through the creature, like just clipping right through it and coming out the other side. And I was like, this hasn't been optimized. This hasn't been playtested. And it's just, it's annoying because there are so many things that they're trying harder this year than they ever have since like Sonic Generations, which was like 11 years ago. But there are still parts that are so immediately undercooked, and like the physics just bug out and, like I said, fling you in the wrong direction. Maybe he starts going the opposite direction on a rail or something for no reason.
Oh,
stuff like
so
that
bad.
Where you're just like, you're so close and then you're getting it wrong to such a missed opportunity degree that it's just annoying. And so, like I said, I've still put 10 hours into it. It's still very Moorish. I still really, I'm enjoying my time overall.
Yeah.
But when it goes wrong, it goes so severely wrong that you're just like, oh my God, why can you guys not just care for like, why can't you get this right?
See, that annoys me as well, because I've seen outlets give it like 9 out of 10. Like I've seen like give it really good reviews. And I was like looking at it just like, come on, lads, it's not a 9 out of 10 game. They must have got the most diehard Sonic fan with the most rose-tinted glasses who cannot accept that the game can be anything less than brilliant because they've waited for it for so long.
The thing is as well, when we played it at EGX, when me and Cy played it, like obviously that was a different version of the game. It's like a vertical slice. It's still the same intro portion, but there's a whole thing. This is the weirdest thing in this game. When you first put it on, it asks you if you want action mode or high speed mode. And in my head, I was like, they're the same thing.
Yeah.
And I had to Google what that was. It's just, it depends on whether you want infinite boost, but a slower Sonic overall, or you want a rationed out boost where a meter goes down, but it's faster overall. So I was like, well, I guess I want high
Why
speed
even
mode.
Why bother it's giving Sonic. You that choice? That's so
I know. But then also, if you hit pause and go in the options in the clunky UI, there's lots of sliders for like Sonic's starting speed and then like boost speed, and they're all on sliders. So I'm just, but there's also like a loot system to get all these different collectibles to make him faster, to rank up your speed, but you can also just max out the sliders and then start faster, but then that bugs all the physics out even more because then you just can't control him very well.
This is sounded like an absolute like Brompton cocktail, a heady mixture of just death. No thank you, that's too many options, and it's not up to the player to decide if they're going to break the game just through the, like, I tell you what, there's content to be made on this, mate. There's content in terms of like video games you could break by doing nothing or something like that.
Games that broke themselves.
So
but yeah, it feels like this weird debug menu thing. And so yeah, I like I said, I'm 10 hours in. I've just started the third island. Also shout out to the character writing. Not to spend forever. I am gonna stop talking about Sonic Frontiers.
No, this is your one shot, mate. You enjoy your time in the sun right now, because do you know what? I thought that this was gonna be heapings of praise on this, but this is dollops of sour cream on my ice cream right now. I'm enjoying this.
It's a mixed bag. The parts that I like, I really love. But it's one of those things where every time you let yourself think, this is great, I'm really enjoying this, something goes wrong. Something just
bugs out. That is the Sonic franchise. That's the Sonic franchise as a whole.
The moment that you relax and
let your guard down, that's the moment that it kicks you square in the plums.
Yeah, I thought they would like get it more right this year. Like they realized that Sonic 2 blew the F up. Sonic is in a bigger position this year in media overall than he's been in years. You think they would nail it. And they've tried to nail it. Bits are better, but it's not
there.
Do
you know what it sounds like? It sounds like in a weird way, if they'd actually done less, this would have been a better game. And the fact that they tried to do more and overstretch themselves has basically meant that they've done the self-fulfilling prophecy of Team Sonic, Sonic Team, whichever one they're called, actually going like, we can't actually program a game 100% well.
The thing is, I'll end this by saying that one of the other things that stands out as a major positive, and this will be a hilarious statement, is that the character writing in Sonic Frontiers is really, really good. And also, Sonic Frontiers might be a bit of pandemic art. There are bits in this that are super self-reflective. There's a bit where Knuckles is talking about how he only lived his life protecting the emeralds, and he really should, he should get out there and do more stuff. And Sonic's like, well, go out there and live your life. And he's like, you know what? I will. And it's like stuff like that. That I'm just like, is this like self-reflective thing? And also Amy Rose, like her whole thing is about like freeing, they're called Cocos, these little characters that look exactly like Koroks from Breath of the Wild.
Brilliant.
Or from Zelda in general, but obviously legally distinct. You save some of them, and their whole thing is that when they unite, when you fulfill their wishes, they die. So even though you're like fulfilling them, and like they're little tiny little cute characters, and one of them's like trying to find their ultimate partner on the other side of the island, you reunite them and then they die together, and then it's really sad. And then it's all this general thing of like Sonic being like, well, at least they got to live their life. And it's just like, are you just Sega, are you all right? Like the Sonic team, are you guys okay? Like,
at least they got to die together. Sonic, a game for kids.
And it's just, yeah, like I feel like the Sonic fandom is like 3-year-olds and 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we need to like kind of tick both boxes. But yeah, man, it's a fascinating mess, but it's a mixed bag. Tell you what though, we should actually do some questions.
I'll tell you what.
We'll get through some questions. So we got a whole lovely response from people. First one from Jacob Sawyer, who says, who would you consider as the top 5 best written video game characters? Maybe we'll do the top 3. Also, have been watching and listening to you guys talk about games for about 5 years, and thank you, as I just started my first job in the games industry, and I wouldn't have made it this far without the podcast. Well, thank you very much for getting in.
That's amazing, and congratulations. I hope that you absolutely smash it. I'm sure that you will. And you know what? Five years listening to us.
Whew. I know, right?
I know. That would motivate you. That would motivate you to just basically go and get into the games industry to shut us up.
Yeah. If you get high enough, you can get in control of the entire Banter podcast and then tell us to stop prattling on about Sonic for 20 minutes.
Yeah, they're just like a little memo goes slid under the door every single episode. Start the podcast.
Note to self, actually start the podcast. The best written video game characters. The reason I put this as the first question was because I was going to use this to dovetail into Sonic Frontier's version of Knuckles, but I won't do that now.
Okay.
I will say that I think Kratos is incredibly well written, especially the new version.
100%. I haven't experienced the new version, but I have experienced the 2018 version, and I thought that that was such a radical departure from his like action-heavy, chaos bro attitude that I was super, super pleased to see a more reflective person who was motivated to violence for different means other than that there was just violence to be had.
Yeah, and I just that whole idea of like trying to do better and acknowledging the past and like knowing you can't escape it, but trying to do as much as you can. I love that stuff. My other one would be, I guess we can maybe do top 3 each or whatever.
Sure,
we kind of agree on Kratos, but another one for me would be Madeline in Celeste. I just there's that whole game's writing, but I feel like just the way Madeline's written, it's just this brilliant on point dissection of depression, anxiety, and acknowledging those mindsets. And what if those mindsets were another person? Could you have a conversation with them and kind of overcoming and learning to work with that entity learning to work with your quote-unquote worst aspects to become something better overall. I think that game is unbelievably helpful. I think that thing is incredibly well put together.
I feel like it's one of those like touchstone games, isn't it? Where you just like you can just instantly recommend it, even if you know the person isn't particularly into that style of game. It's just that the narrative and tone carries so much more weight than anything else. I would say for me, I mean, it's a bit of a cop-out to say every character from Disco Elysium, but if we narrow it down, Harry Dubois, obviously the main character that you play as, I enjoy the fact that you shape how terrible a human being he is. And there is no right decision. Even when you're doing the right thing, it's usually at the expense of other people's happiness. And I just think that the character writing in that game is so unique in the sense that if you rely on a certain play style, if you go in heavy-handed too many times, then your brain becomes wired to do that and will make those actions and decisions for you. And I feel like as a character study, how we live our own lives and sometimes fall into patterns of behavior, having it so readily presented to us is really important because you look at it and just go, damn, I do make impulse decisions that are based on certain aspects of my psyche that I don't control consciously. And I need to break those chains if I'm to have a balanced perspective on life.
I think Disco is a hell of a shout because just across the board, the level of writing, like literally that entire game is just phenomenal. Even the narration, even like the text descriptions and everything, when you're unlocking different thoughts, like, yeah, Disco is next level. There's a whole bunch of articles doing the rounds at the minute, which we talked about before on the pod, that Amazon's influence on their parent company is like affecting the brand and
what they're trying to do with Disco
and whatever. But Disco Elysium as an individual thing, if you just go play it, there's a level of writing to that that is just next level. I feel like I want to throw someone from Mass Effect in here. I kind of want to just put like either Garrus because he's sort of split between defending, like trying to friend fight for his homeland and I forget his and Palavin is his homeworld, and trying to do the right thing. And he's like an ex-cop, and it's like how far does justice go? And he kind of gets more done when he leaves the Systems Alliance stuff, or maybe Morden Solus, this sort of genius scientist. I'd probably go with Morden, like this like genius scientist who ends up trying to sort of like, well, he makes like a genocidal serum thing, the genophage that affects the Krogans, and then it's all about him being this genius scientist who's applied his knowledge in the wrong way, and then ultimately, if you let him have it, he can have his redemption in Mass Effect 3. And I just love that line where he says, you know, the whole idea of like dispersing the cure for this genocidal thing, and he says, I have to do it, I have to sacrifice myself, and it's like someone else might have gotten it wrong. And it's like the perfect loop for where he started and where he ends. So that would be my third, I think.
That's a good shout. I enjoy Jack's story as well from Mass Effect 2, where, like going from just a really emotionally broken perspective to healing, learning to accept and trust. I feel like Mass Effect 2's suicide mission style approach to the main narrative was so important in bringing together different aspects of very broken, disenfranchised people and uniting them under hope. And that is like, it's a great story. Enjoy that a lot, because it's always a case of, even though we're talking about aliens and sci-fi craziness, the very grounded nature of each of those characters is so relatable. So I was like, yes, man. Big love to the Mass Effect 2.
That like reveal in 3 as well, that she's like become a teacher, really good.
It's
like
a beautiful turn, isn't it? Because it's like, you're not allowing your pain to go and influence other people. You're using what you've built to dissipate that pain to teach other people how to deal with their stuff. And I'm like, yeah, cool, man.
Yeah, like
cool.
Doing right by the next generation kind of thing. Yeah. It's like if you were raising a child or something. And we also had a question from Jenko, who says, which game has the best antagonist and why?
Ooh, so I guess Jenko, like, my boy.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think the defaults are like Voss, maybe the Elusive Man.
Handsome
Jack. Yeah. I'm trying to think of like villains that I like love to hate. Odin's definitely very well done in Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. If you get stuck into that, but he's not got that much screen time.
Balder. Yeah,
in Baldur's great too.
Just fantastic, because it was always the sympathetic villain all the way through. Mm-hmm. You go thinking, oh, this guy is just straight up evil and therefore must be bested. But as you go through, it's like not being able to feel anything. The amount of emotional turmoil that he's going through and disconnected from the universe around him. It's just life itself has no meaning. So therefore he finds purpose in the most odd ways.
Jeremy Davies as well. Like, he was in Lost. He was like Faraday in Lost. And he's like, I would never have thought of him as like a god character to play. But he rounds out Baldur so well. All the like the talk. Like you said, the torment that he has.
Another good antagonist that I don't feel gets enough praise, admittedly because of his rather sleepy vocal delivery, is Benny from Fallout New Vegas. I know that Matthew Perry played him, and most people, we kind of come down on the consensus that it was a fairly okay performance. There were some good lines, there were some very sleepy lines, but overall it balanced out to make a memorable character. And I love the fact that he explains all the way through when you're just catching up to him, like, hey, it wasn't anything personal. You had something I wanted and I basically put you on ice because of the just unfortunate luck of the draw. But when you find out more about his motivations as to what he wants to do with Mr. House's tech and how he wants to influence New Vegas going forward, he's strangely charming and he's funny and he's got ridiculous lines, like when he keeps on saying like ring a ding ding baby and all this like
hello.
He's just got like tons of like that sort of like vernacular that's so out of time and out of touch, but is so funny and works perfectly for his character. So yeah, I do like that.
Also kind of feels like he has to play a certain role to get by anyway, like in that specific context. Like he's saying all those little one-liners and he's trying to be sort of old school gangster.
He's quite like a pathetic, scared little guy, isn't he? Because he's just like, oh, please don't kill me.
I'll throw in as well my ultimate antagonist. My ultimate favorite villain is Liquid Snake. Cam Clark's performance, especially in the original Metal Gear Solid. Because after that, it kind of goes a bit skew-whiff. Like after he dies, he kind of gets brought back and it's kind of sometimes it's Ocelot's voice and sometimes it's not.
I have to say, as much stick as I give Metal Gear Solid 4 for being just so full of itself, so very Metal Gear Solid 4, shall we say, there is that beautiful moment where they're having the slog of a fist fight at the end of it and it's Ocelot talking and then Liquid and then Snake's talking and everyone's just basically just hammering home with their fists and their words how much of a long journey it's been, and I'm like, cool, that was pretty emotionally satisfying. That
my favorite bit is, I love all the payoffs in Metal Gear 4 towards the end. There's that bit, like you said, where they're fighting each other and it's like you've got, I don't know how much has happened in the canon, like 7-8 years of fighting or something. Yeah. And it's like they have that bit where they're punching each other, fighting, the and they rest. Yeah, all the flashbacks, and it's like all the different lifetimes that they fought, and then they kind of rest like forehead to forehead, and they both get the serum out, like they're going to inject each other. They're going to inject themselves with adrenaline, but they inject each other so that they can keep the fight going, because they both know that they both need to have this fight. And I'm just like, that's a great moment. Like if that was in like an 80s action movie, it would be like Hollywood legend, like that, the scene where the hero and the villain heal each other so they can settle this properly.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that bit. Next question from Honest NPC, who says, "Hello, legends, loving all the work you do.
Hello.
When is the best time to own a console? I suffer from the Scott effect and I buy everything at launch, but is it best to buy near the end when there are more games and it's cheaper? Is this proof that there is real value in FOMO?"
Thing is that we both come from very different perspectives, I feel, on gaming, don't you? You buy everything day one and you play through it regardless of how shoddy some of the early releases are. I definitely wait for a game to prove itself to be worthy of my time, because I don't think that neither of us are wrong or right in the way that we choose to play games. It's just how we prefer to play them. Like, just because I choose to wait doesn't mean that I look and poo-poo all of the other stuff. I just think to myself, I've got hobbies, mainly Warhammer, that are so time intensive that I basically spend so much time painting and making stuff for that, that I think when it comes back to gaming, I'm like, this game's gotta be good.
It also depends on, you know, if we're reviewing something, we'll try and prioritize that. But yeah, I try and dive into everything just because I just like seeing whatever the new hotness is. But I think there is value in FOMO in gaming, because so many things are broken. Like if you were going to if you're going to place a bet on whether a game is broken or not, you'd be right more often if you bet that something would be broken on day one. That's just a sad reality of gaming. So I think, there is value in FOMO in this case.
Which is so funny, because you get people on the review for God of War Ragnarok, all across all of the sites that I've been watching it on, everyone's just been saying, this is so rare. A single player, no microtransaction, no loot box, no season pass, fully fledged single player experience that works on day one. How rare is that? And that is a sad state of affairs.
Oh man, I know. The thing is even God of War, like, thankfully it's been patched now, but when I was in the review period, just because they gave us it so early, I had it for like 2 weeks before launch, there were a couple of game-breaking bugs there where I had to email Sony and just say like, hey, I had this, again, these are specifically fixed because they're listed in the patch notes, and thankfully I tested again, not the case, but I did have a couple of game-breaking things where a quest didn't trigger. I had a one where, because you get access to a sled that you can travel around one of the realms in, or a couple of the realms, and I had a thing where a cutscene played where the dogs in the sled, Kratos walked them out of a gate and then the gate shut behind him and then the sled warped back to behind the gate again,
but
I couldn't get back through to get it, and so I just was stuck there and it wanted me to go like down this like whole long path to get to the next part of the mission, but I could run there as Kratos, but then nothing happened when I got down there. So it was just like, it just didn't work, so I just had to email them and just say, hey, there's this thing, and then that got fixed and everything. But like, yeah, even God of War had a little bit rough, but it was still infinitely better than the vast majority of games at the top. I mean, it's what, like a year later from Halo Infinite, and it's only just getting co-op and Forge and stuff now as well.
The thing is that it's so ridiculous when you see certain big companies approach to it. Like Nintendo, they usually release immaculate games, maybe a few glitches here and there, but nothing like out, like what you would consider to be absolutely terrible. Then you've got Sony, which tries its best and has occasional hiccups, and Microsoft, I don't know, man. Every time they put their stuff out, I remember Gears of War 2 and 3, But like when that came out, there was like day one patches that were quite large for that. Mm-hmm. Especially
still
the multiplayer.
Their reputations are pretty solid though. Like that whole run across the 360, I guess patches in general were a lot smaller because you couldn't do multiple gig patches back then. It was just a few kilobytes. But yeah, next question from your done messed up Aaron, who says, good day, gents. Unfortunately, I don't get to play God of War until next week as we're road tripping to Philadelphia. We'll have fun.
Nice.
And get some cheese. What are your favorite road trips / driving songs? Bonus points if they are hot gaming tracks for burning rubber.
Oh.
Maybe the Burnout 3 soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, the Burnout 3 soundtrack is great because I remember, I think it's The Matches have a song on there, which is just an absolute belter. In terms of like great gaming soundtracks, you've got your Cyberpunk 2077 is absolutely
that's
phenomenal.
Pretty solid to drive to.
And I feel like if you were driving to that, if you got the sort of like open highway moment of just being like, there's nothing else either side, and you've just got the thumping sort of like
that song, because you've got the instrumental stuff and you've got the specific songs. There's a one called Resist and Disorder by Resodrome, I think they're called. That's like my favorite song on that soundtrack. I'd also give a massive shout out to Rebel Galaxy's soundtrack, but the original one. It's by this guy called Blue Saraceno, and it's just like really swampy slide guitar blues, and obviously that game is like space truckers and just sort of like it's like you know, like a lorry simulator in space kind of thing. You're just hauling stuff.
Perfect
and,
for a road trip.
Shout out to Rebel Galaxy. Like Rebel Galaxy Outlaw is fun too. They did more story stuff in it, but the original one is just here's your truck or your space truck. Go, you know, like, it's like Firefly. It's just like go get resources, go do this
that
thing.
That sounds
like,
awesome. I've never even played that. That sounds great.
Oh, dude, I think you would fall in love with Rebel Galaxy. I think you would just play nothing else for like a week. It's got such a vibe to it. Like and all the ships are like really weighty and oh man, like yeah. I'd go with the old Blue Saraceno. Any other picks for you?
I think you could probably pick any of the Wipeout games as well and get a decent soundtrack from there if you want your sort of like synth heavy sort of like driving bassline stuff. If you want something with a bit more chill so that you can appreciate the landscape around you, I suggest going back to Bastion. I feel like Bastion is such a great soundtrack, and I can't remember the name of the composer.
It's Darren Korb, if you think of
Darren Korb, that's it, yeah. And then Darren also did Transistor as well, which is another phenomenal soundtrack that I would suggest.
That's the thing, because I was thinking, like, when I think of driving music, my mind goes to Joe Bonamassa, who's, like, an incredible blues guitarist. And I was trying to think of, like, when I think of driving music, I think of, like, I don't know, slower blues stuff with occasional epic guitar stuff. But I can't think of a Joe Bonamassa alternative in game form, which is where my mind went to Blue Saraceno and Rebel Galaxy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'd be chasing something that is, like, yeah, just, I'm driving, I'm getting through this thing, like it's something that's a bit more trundly.
We're going,
really,
brother. We're going,
we're getting there. But I feel like that's what I would be going for. Next question from AJ, who says, UBP, what's your thoughts on Sony's game price spike now that they've been charging a new premium for quite a while now? Do you think it's a trend that will carry over to Xbox, PC, and Switch? Mm-hmm. Anyways, hope you're both doing well. You both put a smile on my face. Well, thank you very much.
Cheers.
That's such lovely words. Yes, to be honest, Phil Spencer said that going forward, they'll have to raise prices for stuff. They've just not been specific about it yet.
The thing is that, like, do they have to? Do they have to? With the increasing move towards digital download games, your reliance on physical media being the cost that the consumer has to absorb is just, it holds no water whatsoever anymore.
No.
I think that your development costs, as I've said many, many times before, your consumer should not foot the bill for your $5 million tech. It's up to the developers if they choose to implement that. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be paying the price for it. I think that inflation as a whole, you could argue, would see a small rise in price, but I'm not seeing anything yet that justifies the jump to the $70 price tag. I just, like, it's going to blow my mind when we top up to the £100 or dollars for a game. That's going to be insane. You're going to look at somebody, and let's face it, wages will not have met the inflation of the video game and entertainment industry.
Nope,
you will be looking at somebody who is still going to be earning just over base wage, and they'll be like, wow, that's not even like a weekend off the drink splurge. Like that is like not eating for an entire week just so I can play one game.
Well, that's the thing. It's like that idea. I remember, I forget the name of the critic that said it a good few years ago that said gamers were getting this incredible deal because if you compared hours per price to the likes of a movie, it's like, well, a movie ticket is like £10, $10, whatever, if not more. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you get 2 hours, let's say, if you average it out, maybe even an hour and a half, that there's sort of like the price per hour of entertainment in gaming. It's like, if you apply that same model, well, we're getting hundreds of hours in like a Skyrim or a Witcher 3 or an Elden Ring for, let's say, £40 or £50, it depends where you get it from. That idea is that we're getting incredible value for money and they should put the prices up. I forget the person who said that, but it was like that method of thinking is interesting, I guess, because you could apply different price models to different games. But then I think that for me, the quality is not there in terms of if you're then treating them as products, then they're not refined products at launch. Like it almost, they go down in price as they get fixed. It's like a weird back and forth.
Well, you've got to think as well, like, yes, Scott, you may be getting 60 hours of this game, but 50 of those hours are going to be repetitive live service model style missions that are not entertaining in the slightest. Your entertainment per hour is actually going down at that point where you're, I mean, how many times have you had that sort of glass shattering moment where you've been playing through a game and just been like, this isn't actually that fun, but I'm now 40 hours deep into it. So I
may or may not be playing Sonic Frontiers right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you think to yourself, like, well, I might as well just carry on because I'm close to the end. And you just, your emotions just go downhill over and over again. You just go like, cool, I've seen the end of that. I've done it, but I stopped enjoying about 20 hours ago.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to be paying like a high premium just for bloat. I feel like some of the worst games, you know, recently have been full of bloat, like all the Ubisoft stuff making their name on it. But yeah, I feel like there's more interesting ways to monetize people. There's more interesting ways to monetize fan bases in respectable ways, not just, you know, siphoning off story.
And you raise a fantastic point here, which is the case of if you have games that are $70, £70, and then you're putting microtransactions, live service models that allow you to milk your consumer base dry, that, to me, are two separate things. You can't say that we're raising the cost of the base game and we're putting more microtransactions and DLC and season passes and battle passes into it. Those two things should be inversely related. If the price goes up, the amount of money that you should require from the player over a longer period of time should go down, or make your game cheaper so that then you can justify putting in more microtransactions. I would rather pay, and this is the thing, I do dole out on microtransactions every once in a while if it's a cosmetic skin that I like, if it's something that I really would like for it and I don't, and it doesn't affect the gameplay of it at all, then yeah, I'll splurge. But I would love to look at a game and say, cool, that, let's keep it at the £40 price like we had way back way, but allow more microtransaction storefronts in that do not engage with the actual gameplay. I would, because I can I can ignore ads all day long. I can ignore somebody telling me that I've only got 3 hours left to buy this exclusive gun skin.
Right.
Like, I can just get rid of that. So I would rather pay a lower entry fee and then be like, yeah, cool, it is also there. I know that I think it's younger kids.
Those things are like case by case, because like Warframe definitely nailed that model where it doesn't feel like it's very predatory. It feels like the devs are very much in conversation with the fan base, and it's like they figured out a monetization model that works. But it's like there's always that element of greed that like sneaks in. It's like and it's always case by case in terms of the game's design. Like if there's a narrative component, then you can't Asura's Wrath it and put the ending behind another DLC paywall.
That was absolutely mad.
Or Assassin's Creed 2, it was like, well, there was like two chapters in the middle of Assassin's Creed 2 that you just didn't have if you didn't have the DLC. Stuff like that's just so stupid. But yeah, and also like with Game Pass, like I have to imagine that if they're sitting around the table as a bunch of businessmen and they know that Game Pass is now on like 20 million subscribers, that they can monetize those 20 million again. Like you've got your, you know, whatever tier of Game Pass you're on is a certain amount coming in per month that is a curated selection of games. But I don't know what Microsoft's cut of any microtransaction that happens within those games is. If they're looking at that number and just saying, well, 20 million transactions can happen every month, or they do happen anyway, but we can have another 20 million every hour because they might take a microtransaction in any one of those 12 games and they get a percentage of that, then I would assume that that'll be the way things go for them.
Yeah.
But it depends how much they pursue that. And if you start seeing Game Pass selections having more monetized games in them, which they thankfully don't right now. Game Pass is an incredible selection of titles.
Yeah.
But I would be very suspicious if they start going down the route of like, this game has tons of microtransactions in it after you've paid the monthly fee.
Agreed.
Final question from Jacob Wright, who says, with the Game Awards around the corner, which reveals would you like to see? What's your dream reveal?
Is that like a brand new game coming back for this? Like,
hey, you can do whatever you want. Jeff Keighley's sitting there. A Soul Reaver remake.
Oh,
the fact that
is.
Crystal Dynamics have listened and they announced something. I'm more excited for what gets Game of the Year. I feel like this is one of those years that's fun and interesting and get your foam fingers out for whether you're on Team Elden Ring or Team God of War or whatever, and then seeing how that stuff shakes out. So I'm kind of more interested in the awards themselves in terms of what the panel of experts reveal as the game industry's Game of the Year.
That's true. Yeah. I think that for me, I would love to see, what's a game that I haven't had a chance to to play on in a while. You know what? Let's go. I know that obviously we were talking roughly about Marvel Midnight Suns, and obviously with Fire Axis going to be moving away from that project, or after they've continued to support it after its release, let's get them back on XCOM 3. Let's start moving the chapter forward a bit. Let's actually get that going again. Also,
round the trilogy out.
More information on Space Marine 2. That game, ooh, that game looks so good, mate. So good.
Actually,
I think Dark Tide's out soon.
You've got the rest of this year is like RAM. Like, you still got Callisto. There's Pokemon in a week. There's just all sorts of things. Yeah, I kind of want more Zelda stuff, but I don't feel like Nintendo play well with the Game Awards. I feel like they do their own thing. They'd rather have their own live stream. But I would love to see anything more from Breath of the Wild 2 or Tears of the Kingdom, because the last time they showed it, it was like a 10-second gameplay clip.
It got us hyped, like, though, didn't it, mate?
What is that? Actually, I tell you what, that's the ultimate reveal, the new Switch, because the Game
that
Awards...
that is a great shout.
You know, years ago, it was the Series X got revealed, and I, like I said, I think Nintendo would do their own thing, but still, you've got... there's clearly a new Switch coming, so why don't you just do that on one of the biggest stages of the year in regards to the mainstream fandom?
It's smart, it's sensible, therefore it's not going to be what Nintendo do.
So exactly, they'd rather do it themselves. But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and talking points. I think we got past three or four this week. We've done...
Yeah, we're on track. We're on track for the usual.
but yeah, this has been the Entitled Partner Podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. I've been Scott Tilford, you've been Jules Gill.
I have indeed, and throughout this episode, I've been sipping on a lovely beverage from my Scott and Jules UBP mug, which you can get from, and I don't know the thing off by hand, but it's incredibly long. Go to whatculture.com/merch. I'm sure that there'll be something.
I tell you what.
Something like that, yeah.
I realised if you just Google Entitled Banter Pod mug, you can't, we're like the second link.
There you go.
Thankfully,
wait, we're not
that.
Even the first link.
I think the first one was like a sponsored thing for other Untitled mugs, but whatever, we're up there. You'll find us. We're in there.
Go buy the mug. Give us our, let me just check my notes here. Oh yeah, 0% cut of this and enjoy sipping out of our beautiful faces.
Yes. And a massive thank you once again, and we'll catch you next week.
Goodbye, everyone. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.